You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 26 August. We've got U.S. House Price Index data, 3 p.m. our time. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Petli Radenhuis, Serenia Capital Advisors. So the market is loving, I suppose, the risk on as they shift to jobs rather than inflation targeting. Is this just going to continue the current bull? We've got Jeff White from Advertech. Strong results, the student numbers increase. And Lance Foxcroft from Itatal. A tough set of numbers, but they are growing market share and they did pay a special dividend. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Consumers may cough up billions more after nurses' closed-door Eskom deal. Pricing expert estimates the electricity tariff increase could rise as much as 25.24%. Business Day, airport company South Africa posts 1.1 billion rand profit as passenger growth and tariffs drive gains. Airport operator cites strategic turnaround plan and infrastructure upgrades in driving financial performance. Morning markets, US is red, S&P down 0.4%, NASDAQ off 0.3%. East is mostly red, Sydney down 0.3%. Tokyo down 1.25%. Hong Kong 0.1% down. Tencent is the green, up 0.25%. Commodities are mixed. Gold futures higher 3,421. Brent 68.52. On the red side is platinum at 1,343. Palladium 1,112. The rand is 17.61. Bitcoin 109,900. Top 40 opening call red open. 310 points, or a third of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Petli Radenhuis, Serenia Capital Advisors. Petli, appreciate the early morning time. Markets on Friday loved Jerome Powell's comments at Jackson Hole, as he said they're going to sort of focus on jobs rather than inflation for now. And everyone is saying we've got pretty much the consensus is two rate cuts from the US, September, December. Some JP Morgan say we might get a November one instead. In essence, this is the risk on trade. I mean, if we're getting lower rates and inflation, who cares about inflation? This is risk on, and markets at highs are likely to move higher.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. Yeah, I mean, at least that's my interpretation of it as well, right? And I think the market, I'll be honest with you, I'm quite surprised the S&P is down this morning. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, we were kind of flattish last night when we closed. 6-7 o'clock in the evening, it's still mostly flat. So I thought we were going to end higher today, to tell you the truth. But okay, a bit of softness in the market is always welcome. It's been a bit of a tear. We've made record highs, so it makes sense to come down a percent or two. It's not a problem. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the it's interesting to me to see how this inflation mandate is kind of abandoned. I suppose this is also a little bit of Trump getting what he wants, right? He's been saying cut rates, stimulate the economy for the longest time. And now it's like there was no justifiable reason to do so according to the Fed mandate. Mm-hmm. So the Fed just abandons the mandate and says, all right, lower rates for longer. Everybody's expecting a rate cut. That's not necessarily going to happen. We might just stay where we are for a longer period, which isn't necessary, which would probably be more sustainable in the long term, but I don't know. Maybe we see a rate cut. I'd welcome one locally as well. We know that, you know, interest rates coming down or staying low is good for people's spending. It's bad for inflation. But if inflation isn't the problem, then hey. Yeah, out of trouble, it seems, is what the Fed is telling us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to your point, I mean, in a couple of, literally, I think 3 hours ago, Trump has fired Fed Governor Lisa Cook. Whether he has the authority, we will find out in the hours and days ahead. But I take your point. I mean, in essence, I mean, the Fed does have the dual mandate, and that's a balancing act. But I mean, they are not so worried about the inflation side. They are more worried about the job side. And I suppose, I mean, even inflation, that juices equity returns. You know, a 3% inflation gives them ability, listed companies, to raise prices, get some more margin, and push it higher. The concern, two things. One, and you were telling me this all of beginning of last year, is every time the Fed starts cutting rates, it leads to a recession. So far, not happening. And of course, valuations are already at epic levels.
Yeah, so this is obviously still a concern. And you know, historically, this relationship is intact. Mm-hmm. It's happened every single time. It's not going to be any different this time. However, there is a bit of a lagging indicator, or it's a bit of a lagging effect. Now, truth be told, if you look at historical averages, the recession should have already started, and it's not, right? Mm-hmm. So, I was saying yesterday, it's like, well, you expect this thing to happen because of historical patterns. It's not happening. I suppose it's got to eat a little bit of hat, right? And say, look, don't predict the market. I've got to tell myself this all the time. Stop predicting and just follow. The market wants to go higher, follow it up.
Yeah.
But that historical relationship is still there, and it still essentially will happen. It's just a matter of when, right? I mean, if you look at stuff like, there's a great book, actually. So if you're listening to this and you want to learn a bit more about this stuff, there's a book called Intermarket Analysis that looks at these types of relationships and the leading and lagging impact or effect of these types of things. Like, for example, a weakening dollar, which is a system, it's just essentially what we've been having since January, right?
Yeah.
Dollar weakens for 3 to 6 months. This starts to lead to the commodity prices rising. 3 to 6 months later, after commodity prices start to rise, inflation starts to creep up. So first, that weakening dollar is boosting equities all the way, and sort of 6 to 12 months down the line, inflation starts catching up, interest rates go up, this starts to bring down bonds and equities together. So this one lever pulling on something can have an effect on something else, but there's this lagging effect. And during certain periods of time, like, for example, in the 80s or in the 90s, for example, we had the dollar weakening, interest rates coming down, equity markets going up, inflation going up. So it's kind of a situation that we have now where that historical relationship between these different types of indicators and different types of markets kind of breaks down for a bit. And that ultimately led to the 2000.com bubble crash, right?
And what we've got, I mean, the Fed did do what? They did three cuts, September, November, December last year. And then they've paused. So maybe that's kind of, I don't know, paused in a sense the resultant recession, perhaps. We'll leave it there. Pietro Redenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Jeff White, CEO of Advertech. Disclaimer up front, I hold Advertech shares. Results 6 months ending June saw revenue up 10%, HEPS up 15%, and dividend up 18%. Jeff, appreciate the time. Let's start with schools. Let's start with the rest of Africa. Small, but doing very well. And another acquisition post-period end. It really is playing out nicely.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that rest of Africa business is building some strong momentum. And Flipper has performed well for us that we brought into the group in November of last year. And the Regis Runda acquisition that we just announced should further add to that pace of growth.
In tertiary, you've also just launched the Rosebank International University College, that in Ghana, I think literally in the last week or so. So you're taking tertiary as well to Ghana?
Yes, we think Rosebank is the ideal brand to take into not just Ghana, but multiple African markets, leveraging the central academic team here and the qualifications and know-how, and also the international team that we built in that schools business. So we are, as you said, just opening in Accra, but we would also like to expand the tertiary division into those other markets of operation, those being Botswana, Ethiopia, and Kenya.
And this is a traditional tertiary. In other words, it's not distance learning.
No, this is full-on contact. Yeah. We have a distance option as well, but the primary focus is contact.
And is there, I mean, are you able to sort of leverage head office back here in South Africa for both some of the schools and the tertiary rollout into the rest of the continent?
Yes, you know, I think we've accumulated expatriate skills through what we've done with schools, mm-hmm. and we can definitely leverage the central academic strength we have here. We have a team of 160 based in South Africa, only focused on academic excellence, but also the IT, which is increasingly mm-hmm. important to our operation, and also the finance function, and the HR guys also are able to significantly help in that expansion program.
Your student numbers in the schooling division continuing to grow, notwithstanding it's tough out there for a consumer, although we always say, you know, educating your kids is probably a top priority for most families, but you're still getting the growth coming through across your brands.
Yes, you know, I think even in South Africa, which is undoubtedly under economic pressure, we posted enrollment growth of 4%, which I think is pretty solid. What we're focused on is making significant investments into people, systems and facilities so that we deliver great value to parents through superior experiences and academic outcomes for their kids. And that's driving the strong enrollment growth mm-hmm. Across the group, up 13% this year. And that's providing a great base for our financial performance.
You mentioned facilities. When I was at school, way back in the day, that meant we had a rugby field. These days, facilities are a lot more than just sports, I imagine.
Yes, you know, I mean, you're looking at multi-use AstroTurf, you're looking at swimming centres, athletics, you know, the list of demands from modern parents is long, but you know, I think we're doing a good job providing what they're looking for.
Yeah, I remember we also had a swimming pool, although it was just a swimming pool, it was nothing fancy. Tertiary, I mean, tertiary also good. I mean, and we see it every February, we see the school leavers trying to get into the universities, not enough positions. You're picking up on that, you're getting strong student growth, and you're getting really, really strong margins at the same time. And I've asked you, I used to ask Roy the same question before. I mean, the margins keep on growing.
Yes, you know, there's a lot of operating leverage in education businesses generally. And if you get that enrollment number going, then, you know, that's very helpful to the overall P&L. Mm-hmm. I think in tertiary, we have some very strong brands, and the published market information would suggest that we're growing market share in a growing market. Mm-hmm. And I think the imbalance of supply and demand that you touched on, where there aren't enough public university places to satisfy demand, definitely is a tailwind for us. But as I said, we're also growing market share with some very strong brand propositions. And that double up of growth in a growing market is definitely flowing through to the bottom line numbers.
Well, what sort of occupancies do you have at this point in time? And I appreciate you've got sort of installed occupancy, and then you can add, you can build out in some of the places you've got, but what is your sort of occupancy levels at the moment?
Well, we only measure those for schools, mm-hmm. And we look at two ratios. We look at how much we're using of built capacity, mm-hmm. and how much we're using of ultimate capacity, and you know, we are tracking fairly stable estates at you know, sort of low 80s of use of existing capacity and low 70s of ultimate capacity. So that's an efficient level to run the existing schools, mm-hmm. But we're also able to add capacity in line with demand when we need to.
Yeah, it gives you that space. It also gives you that leverage you refer to. You purchased the property in Grayston Grove, Sandton. I think that deal went through last year. How's that going? When's it going to open? Because that's going to be a giant campus.
Yes, we're going to open that for the new academic year in 2026. Mm-hmm. We're moving both the Varsity College Sandton business and the Bordeaux Vega business there. We are doubling capacity to 9,000 initially, but the ultimate capacity on that site is north of 11,000. And, you know, furious building work going on at the moment, but it's on track. And we are really building a magnificent facility from both a teaching and learning and from a sports and recreation point of view.
The last division, resourcing, I mean, fairly small in your world, a 50 million profit off of 769 million revenue. But the one blip, revenue down 5%, operating profit off 2%. I suppose that just talks to the broader economy we see out in South Africa with a 1% GDP growth over the last decade or more.
Yes. I mean, the first point that I'd make on the resourcing business is that it's less than 5% of total operating profit.
Yeah, yeah.
So we are largely an education business. Within that, we There's some good news on the SA business, which after a tough year last year, when it made a very small loss, it's returned to profitability. We have had to deal with the sudden decision by President Trump to end US aid in our Africa resourcing business, where about 10% of our contracts were with NGOs linked to charities. And they saw their funding killed pretty much overnight. So we've had to pivot there to other clients. We have seen a slight increase in margins in that Africa resourcing business. And as you pointed out, operating profit is only down a couple of percent. But we're already working on how we rebuild. And that remains an attractive business for us, even if it's a small part of the total organization.
We'll leave it there. Jeff White, CEO, Advertech. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Strong results there, very strong results from Advertech. Do you hold this education stock? I mean, there are three in the market. Stadio doing okay. Kira struggling a bit. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Lawrence Foxcroft, Etotal CEO. Results year ending June saw turnover down 2%, HEPS up 2%, and a total dividend, including special dividend, up 17%. Lawrence, it goes without saying, a tough trading environment. You did mention that sort of Q2, which was the last quarter of last year, picked up a bit, but broadly tough. Excess manufacturing capacity in the index, in the industry rather. It was a really, really tough FY25 in the space.
Yeah, the consumer remains under pressure in South Africa. And we saw, as you said, in Q2 with a bit of disposable income from the two-pot, how nicely things picked up. So we know we're well positioned if the consumer's got some money to grab the opportunities and really delight our customers. But with the relatively low GDP forecast, we're expecting things to remain quite challenging for the next year. We're pleased that we're able to get some real-time volume growth through our business, even though with the price deflation of tiles with the international competition, we saw the top line down a little bit. So we're optimistic that we can hold on to market share and gain a bit of market share, but we don't expect conditions to get any easier in the next year.
You mentioned that market share. As you said, you got some volume growth, you got some market share. How are you growing the market share? Is it price? Is it quality? Is it both?
I think we still offer a lot of benefits to the customer. Our quality is trusted. We have had to reduce our pricing a bit from our manufacturing operations, and you can see that in the margin. The margin's under pressure there. But that's kept us really on the forefront of value for the customer. We sell product that not only delights them with fashion, but also is very affordable given the tough times that we're in. So, yeah, I think we are very... clear in our thinking that we need to have a very low cost base out of manufacturing, and that's our main target for the year, to make sure that we can reduce our operating costs and remain competitive with imports.
I mean, you did your group operating costs down 2.8% for the period. This is something that, it's something I suppose you always look at, but in this sort of environment more so, you've managed it in the last financial year, and you think you can get it down maybe a little more in the next?
100%. That's our focus every year. So it does become more and more difficult, but we keep investing in the latest technology, and we're able to skill up our team to be more productive and reduce costs year on year. So we've managed to, in the last year, have a reasonably good performance there. We've got a few projects on the go and expect to do the same next year.
Are you seeing, we touched on customers, we touched on sort of quality and price. Are customers perhaps also shopping down a bit?
Yeah, we've seen that within our business and smaller baskets as well, but more transactions. So we've seen that trend across the board with all three of our retail brands. But certainly we have products at each price point for our customers. And just because they shop down doesn't mean that they won't find something they're looking for with us. And we continue to offer the great customer experience, no matter what the customers are looking for. So we're also seeing a lot more activity online and through our omni-channel delivery from our stores. We know that we can get products all over South Africa and wherever we trade to our customers with our last mile delivery. So we're optimistic we can reach more customers and that within our three brands, there'll be something for everybody.
Do you do much transactions in the online environment?
Yeah, I think the nature of our product lends itself towards people still wanting to touch and feel the product before they submit, you know, press the button for the final approval online. But our store footprint with, you know, almost 200 stores in South Africa and 210 stores overall provides a good platform for them. We know that a lot of people are going online to do their research and check pricing and, you know, match it to their budget. And we've got nice tools online for them to use to do that. But then they just pop into the nearest store and check, you know, the real color and texture and feel of the product they're getting. And then some of them choose to transact in-store, some go back and transact online. So we've got a good omni-channel model that we think is working well for us.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I do it. I use the website to sort of research, then I go in-store for that sort of final confirmation. A last question. You talk around tariffs. These are not US tariffs. These are tariffs in markets that you would have exported into. That puts pressure on the export. And also, if it's restricting your exports to those markets, it's restricting others, which means that's part of the problem we're seeing locally as sort of some of our markets are putting tariffs up. That is part of the problem where we're getting, I don't want to say oversupply, but a lot of supply in our market.
Yes, I think there's two angles to that. One, there's a massive global oversupply with almost China's gone from 11 billion square meters installed capacity. They're only producing 6 billion. So there's a massive oversupply globally, and most countries have imported some sort of tariff protection for their local industry. You know, Brazil, India, USA, and closer to home, Zimbabwe, Zambia have all got tariffs on ceramic tiles. You know, the international producers are all looking to find a home for their product and keep their factories running.
Yeah.
And that's resulted in a bit of dumping. So we're just asking for a level playing field. We export products to Zambia and Zimbabwe, and we've faced tariffs there, and we still have no tariffs locally with the big producers that have set up in Mozambique, Zambia and Zimbabwe, and we've seen tiles being dumped in South Africa.
Yeah, the point being, if everyone else says we need to protect our industries, we leave it there. It's Lance Foxcroft, Total CEO. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Alex Dace yesterday in Thimble Wealth, talking around that Jerome Powell speech from Jackson Hole. We said jobs rather than inflation. Asked if this was a risky move for the Fed. It was equally split. A third of you said they have a dual mandate. A third said, yes, we could see some stagflation. A third said, let's see if they cut next month. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Master Drilling results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.